Hello, hello.
Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Everyone, what's up, Sajin?
People.
Doing hey, all right, everyone. What's going on?
Aaron, this is you are now listening to the fourth episode of the Non-Target Life. And today we will be covering some exciting stuff. Frankly, stuff that people are failing at. And you've probably noticed that you're not doing well in interviews. And you can only blame the fact that you went to state school for so long. Sometimes you just got to look in the mirror and realize that maybe you are fucking up.
No. It's not that bad. It wouldn't be that depressing. I think, this topic that we're going to speak about is something that it's the only thing I really want to know, to be honest. But, you know, it's only one of the parts, but it's definitely the beginning to hopefully a successful end, if you can agree, right, Sajin?
I don't actually know what that meant, so I'm going to pretend like I know what you said there, but I don't know. But Jason, if you want to take it away and what we're talking about today.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah. I mean, if you guys listen to the third podcast on, you know, why you're not getting interviews, hopefully now maybe you're getting some interviews or you're getting that first round. And the topic we're going to speak about today is how to be successful, how to prepare yourself for these interviews. And we think, and I personally believe that it's really broken down to three main categories. That being first, the technical part, of course, knowing, you know, your technicals, like walk me through a DCF, understanding like how the income statement is broken down, the three financial statements, things like that. The second is behavioral, but I think more specifically, being able to answer situational questions, things like, tell me about how you worked in the team. Tell me about a situation where you had to go over a disagreement, things like that. And then the last one, which is the one I think most people overlook, is your ability to be emotionally intelligent and your ability to understand your interviewer and connect with them. So that being able to, you being able to connect on a personal level, and while you're interviewing, especially if it's in person, you being able to read the interviewer and being able to tell if like maybe your answer is too long, if they seem interested and engaged, and you being able to really control the interview from beginning to end. So I think, I don't know if you want to start off with just the first part, the technical part. I don't know if Sajid, you want to just take that away.
Yeah, just to add to what Jason said on the technical side, and I'm just going to piggyback off of his 3 points and kind of add some of my insights on that is one that on the technical side, it's you need to know like your foundational stuff, but you also need to be able to speak to it on a conceptual level. So what that means is more and more questions aren't just simply like walk me through a DCF or like what are the three methods of valuation. You know, that's expected. I mean, that's like, frankly, you need to know that, right? The basic stuff, you need to know that. You need to be reading your textbook and these guides on your own, so you can answer the conceptual questions more efficiently and easier. And what that means is you might get a question like this, right? It'll be like, hey, you know, Apple is making a new factory. The factory costs $100 million. You know, walk me through what happens the first year. And by the way, that factory for $100 million was funded with $50 million of debt, $50 million of equity, and the debt had 10% interest. And walk me through what happens year one, year two, year three. And then they'll be like, all right, in year three, the factory, you know, we're going to write down our assets. It's going to be a 50% write down. You know, it's like that, guys. So I feel like right now there's probably like silence in the crowd. And those are the questions you're going to be expected to know. Or you might get something like this. You're like, hey, you know, Coca-Cola is trying to grow their revenue, right? So, and grow their bottom line. So is it, what would be better? Would it be better for them to raise their prices, you know, cut out their COGS, you know, what sort of levers would you have to pull on the P&L? So what that means is, you know, driving sales, cutting operating expenses, driving down production costs. What levers do you need to pull to drive EBITDA growth, right? Like you really need to know what the fuck you're talking about to understand what levers to pull to drive EBITDA growth, right? We're really talking financial engineering stuff here. And you're expected to know this stuff, right? And even when we get into valuation, it can get complicated. It's like, hey, if I used, you know, some of the parts or if I use an LBO valuation, why would this produce a higher valuation as opposed to this. And it's really walking through with real numbers, right? So I know I've harped on this for a little bit, but technical questions can get very nuanced into that. The second point, in terms of speaking to experience and my opinion on that, I think something that Jason and I, we've used a lot is it's kind of the bread and butter is a STAR method, like situation, task. I'm actually forgetting what the other two are. No, it's situation, task, action, result.
Yep. There you go.
There you go. Look at that, guys. But even more so than that, as I've developed in my career and I speak to a lot of senior professionals, the best way, and I'll give you an example of how I would walk a senior person through like a time that I worked somewhere, right? First, what I like to do is I like to use the word orient. So I often begin by saying, hey, let me orient you to the situation, right? Let me orient you to what I'm speaking to. And oftentimes, guys, I bring presentations to my interviews because that allows me to control the conversation. Because if they see a deck that I bought, that I brought to the presentation, they'll just focus on what's in the deck and they won't even get to their technical questions. That's the key. Like, that is a secret. That is like literally print out a deck that you've worked on, a presentation, whether it was for like some your student finance club or whatever the fuck it is, bring your own deck, right? And what I'll do is I'll have the deck in my portfolio, I'll whip it out, and I'm like, hey, let me walk you through this deck real quick to answer your question. And I'll orient them to the deck. I'm like, hey, this was the situation. This is what my manager wanted, and this is what I ended up doing. Now, this was the result. Now, let me walk you through the result. And you know, I'll give them a brief overview of the analysis. You'll blow them away. Pants will be wet. Offer signed. You'll be signing up for the 401k. So, I'll speak to that more in detail, but I want to pivot back to Jason. I know I kind of went on the tangent, but the technical side, guys, you need to know the foundational stuff. It's just it's like you need to know it. It's like there's no questions. You need to know it, point blank, full stop. The challenge is knowing your stuff well enough that you can answer those advanced conceptual questions, which you will be asked if you're coming from a non-target school, because they're gonna try to weed you out. They're going to try to weed out everyone. It doesn't matter, frankly. They want the best candidates, right? So if you're there, you're equal. You're just as par up there with the Ivy League student, right? Or the target school student. So you need to be able to answer those conceptual-based questions.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, if you're particularly from a non-target school, but even if you're in a target school, like, I think sometimes target schools is just as tough because the competition is so high. They really want to weed out the best kids from, you know, that individual class. But if you're from a non-target school, yeah, like Sajan said, sometimes they're just extra mean to you. And it's like, all right, screw this kid from XYZ school. Like, I'm going to try to grill this person. And they'll ask you more difficult questions. But just to speak on what Sajan has brought up, his example of bringing a presentation. First, I think that's an amazing thing to do. And I think it's very smart. But I just think if whoever's listening is now going through their backpack, whooping out the next presentation that they did or some class project they did, you just have to be careful in how you present it. Like, just don't come out, whoop it out, throw it in front of the interviewer and say, hey, look at this. You have to be kind of smart in how you
bring
it up. If they ask you, oh, can you tell me about a time you worked in a project or, like, give me a stock pitch or something like along those lines, you can say, oh, yeah, actually brought along with me a project or a presentation I did. Do you mind if I show it to you? Sometimes it might be like, no, screw it. I don't want to see it. Or they might be like, oh, yeah, let me see it. And then, like Sajan said, then once you have that out, you could really control the conversation, really speak upon it. But yeah, again, it's very like, I think, situational. Sometimes, you know, Sajan was probably very good in bringing it out and using like these, I like to call them props to help you in an interview. But we can go about that in like another podcast. But I think, though, the main way to practice is just simply, you know, putting in the time and effort to really understand the concepts. Okay, maybe, you know, you don't have to go right away into the difficult stuff. You first just have to go through the fundamentals, like understand the basic accounting methods. You have to understand the basic three statements, how they connect, the different line items. And then from there, you build off. Then you start going to, okay, I understand these three statements. Now I can go into the valuation method. I can understand the different, you know, big line items like operating profit, you know, EBITDA. And I can go into free cash flow because I understand what, you know, CapEx and working capital is. You know, these are things, the step-by-step process. It's like going to school, you take finance 101, and then you go start taking corporate finance and advanced corporate finance. You just don't jump in straight into a major concept because then you really won't have background. And what someone told me is that you won't have fluency in really being able to understand it and break it down if you get asked a more technical or difficult question. And I feel like, which is most of the problem most people have when they go into these interviews, they go straight into, all right, I need to understand valuation. But then when they get start asking these questions, like Sajin's game is like throwing out these examples, then they run into real problems. So I think, you know, the best thing to do is to, A, you know, if you're in business school, go through your textbooks, go through the things you've learned. That's the easiest way. You already have a head start. But if not, if you're not in like these finance programs, then you could use things like some of the interview guys that we have, things on the internet, YouTube.
And breaking into Wall Street guides are just, man, the breaking into Wall Street guides are literally are worth their weight in gold. I mean, I would read literally, like Jason, I've read the first page to the last page. I read the advanced pages. I read them and read them until I understood it. Like the most advanced accounting questions and like in the guides, they'll, you know, in Breaking into Wall Street, he's like, guys, you don't need to read this unless you have significant full-time experience. I didn't care. I read that. Because if I could understand the most complex accounting question, I'm gonna understand whatever someone asked me. And going back to what Jason said about your textbooks, and I know we're really harping on the technical aspect. We haven't really shifted to the soft skills, which we'll get to, but just how important technical skills are, because before getting to my talk about textbooks and your schoolwork, technical skills are something you can outshine someone, right? Think about it strategically. If you're just comparing yourself to a peer, you look to the left or right of you, whether you're at the same school, a better school or a worse school, whether that person has a better GPA, lower GPA, better work experience, whatever, getting those technical questions right, it's like a free throw. You have an opportunity to score a goal and you need to execute on it, right? Because you're getting asked a black and white, at least in the interviewer's perspective, right? Sometimes I've had situations where someone asks a question, I think the answer is one thing, they think the answer is the other. But for the most part, you're going to be asked a question and there's going to be an answer. It's either the right answer or the wrong answer. And if you're just given right answers, that's going to count for something. That's going to get you those brownie points. You're getting points on the board. So that's why we're really harping on this, because technical questions for someone who's not come from the best background, whether your work experience or GPA or school, your aptitude on technical questions is your chance to shine. You can really use that to outshine your other candidates. Like, hey, you know, this kid, you know, this student's not at the best school or whatever the case is, but hey, he knows his shit. I grilled him or her, and he got his technicals right.
No, that's definitely true. I think, you know, the main thing is to, in an interview in general, the real way to impress the interviewer and to get the interview to become easy is to show off the back as quickly as you can that you're intelligent or that you're smart or what Sajin said, you know your shit. So if you're able to demonstrate your intelligence or your competency or your, you know, understanding of the things that are required for the job, the technical questions, then you can get on to the easier stuff, which is, I mean, usually it's the easier stuff, but the behavioral side, the questions that are more like situational where you can really, in many ways, BS it. And I think, you know, that's what you want the interview to go to as quickly as possible. You want it to go from technical, you know, number stuff where you could definitely get it wrong to something more of a situation where you speak about your life, your background, and where the conversation can get a little more interesting. And, you know, there's not much pressure. I mean, I feel if someone asked me, right, tell me about a time you had to work in a team versus walk me through a DCF. Yeah, I mean, I could walk through someone through a DCF, but it's definitely a lot more annoying, more difficult than me speaking about, you know, a project I did in school. I feel that's a lot easier because I don't have to prepare or know if I'm right or wrong. I know I'm right. It's something that happened in my life. It's not that hard. But being able to craft these stories is a whole other thing. So the best way, right, to do this is to actually go through these experiences, which is why, you know, we stress that you try to be involved in school, you know, have, you know, extracurricular activities so that you could pull from your life experiences when you get asked these, you know, situational questions, like tell me about a time you had a disagreement with a team, tell me about a time you had to lead a team, tell me about a time where you had to handle multiple projects at one time. You know, you can't really answer this unless you actually have these life experiences, unless you're really good at bullshitting and, you know, making up stories, which is something you can do. And not to say that I encourage it, but, you know, if you don't have, you know, a certain life experience, you don't have to make it up. And that's totally fine. You know, as long as you say it with confidence, you will probably be able to get past that. But it's definitely easier if you actually gone through it. Because then sometimes people ask, you know, pretty tough questions, and then you're like, oh, you don't really know what to say. But if you actually been through it, then you go, oh, yeah, like, this is what happened. And it sounds more real and more authentic.
Yeah, and I want to add to that, but just to round out, excuse me, just round out on that technical, the technical aspect is the one thing that I did, and this might have been overboard, but my pride in being able to get my technical questions correct was that, excuse me, is for my textbook, like my corporate finance classes or my accounting classes, guys, everyone, I would actually do like all the questions. I'd literally would do every question possible. And even the questions in the back, like the case studies they give you, because that would really drive home the fundamental foundational understanding of like, hey, corporate finance? What is valuation? Right. And some of your textbooks have pretty challenging questions, right? So just work through those questions. You may not appreciate it at first, but after like within a few months, you'll see as you're going through the guides, you'll be answering the questions as you're reading the question, right? Because it'll just be so intuitive to you. So just keep that in mind. That was a little excessive on my part, but I think that was a key part to my success is that I was pretty aggressive in doing every possible question I could, you know? So that's that.
Well, I think I definitely commend Sergeant for being such a huge nerd. That approach particularly. I really just focused on understanding the concepts. You know, it's definitely good to get a lot of practice, that's for sure. But I also want to mention that, you know, for those who aren't trying to pursue investment banking, you're trying to pursue maybe, I guess equity research, you kind of have the same technical questions as banking. But if you're trying to pursue sales and trading, the technical questions are more towards market-driven questions. So understanding, you know, economic indicators, you know, if inflation goes up, what happens to this? If interest rates go up, what happens to this? Understanding bond pricing and technical questions on bonds like convexity and duration. More market-driven stuff is what you would expect from a sales and trading interview, including like maybe math, brain teasers, or things like that. Those are the things that you would get asked in a sales and trading interview versus a bank interview. We're never going to do another podcast on, you know, the very specific types of interviews between banking, research, and trading. But in the general case, you know, in anything, the technical questions are definitely very important just to show that you're intelligent off the back. Sometimes, you know, they're layered differently within the interview, but if you're able to answer in the first, I guarantee you won't get hard if you don't start stumbling and having trouble answering maybe the beginning questions that you get asked.
Yeah. And then you said commend him for being a huge nerd. Well, very subjective comment on that. But pivoting back to the what Jason was saying, it's a very banking focused versus hey, what you might see in sales and trading and whatnot. I agree with that. The one thing I will say though, guys, is just thinking about what a comment you guys will get this when you guys start working in your internships and full time roles, and I can comment to this. A lot of the stuff you do in interviews in school, you're not going to be doing all this on the job, right? You're not going to show up day one doing some complex, like, you know, merger walk across analysis. And like, you're not going to be doing this hardcore work, right? The purpose of these questions is, hey, does this student have the aptitude to at least understand the type of work they might do, or they understand what type of work goes on? So it's not to say you're not going to do things that you learn in school, but don't be under the impression that your first day on the desk, you're going to be, you know, building out, you know, complex models and putting together fancy PowerPoints. You know, your first 6 months, you're not, you know, it'll be, you know, it'll be an interesting experience, and we'll get to that later. But that's something that a lot of feedback we get is in misunderstanding that students have is that they go into these internships thinking that you're going to be just tasked with doing the most complex financial analysis of all time, right? Like, that's just not going to happen. So the purpose of knowing all this stuff is to show that you have the aptitude to know what's going on and whatnot. So,
That's true. So like, let's talk about a little bit about the next part, which is the behavioral questions. So I think these are probably the easiest prepare for, just because, again, these are things that you're pulling from your life. You have to use, I think the best way to answer them is like what Sajid said, the STAR method. And it's being able to clearly, you know, communicate it in a very simple fashion. Like, tell them like what happened, you know, what was going on, and the role you played in solving it. So the thing I think most people miss in a lot of these situation interviews or like these situational questions You have to answer it like you're the fucking boss. So you did a group project, you're the fucking leader all every fucking time. You know, I did this. You know, you don't want to sound like a total, you know,
alpha,
but you want to say, even if you didn't do every single thing, you want to basically show that you took control and you were able to resolve it. Even if you took a back seat, right, in your group, you know, project or group assignment, pretend you were the person who actually did everything and then really say, oh, yeah, you know, I did X, Y, and Z. You know, I communicate to the teacher that, you know, we need to make a change in our group because one of the people was not performing well. So I took it upon myself, you know, to pick up the slack, and we eventually got the job done at the end and got an A on the project we completed. Something like that, right? I mean, it might not be 100% true, but the main thing is that you want to give examples where you're completing something and you really took charge. That's really the main focus. I think sometimes people take it too literally sometimes, and they basically said exactly what happened without really highlighting themselves in the situation. That's the main thing. You want to highlight yourself, because that's the way you really impress the interviewer when they ask you these situational questions.
Yeah, and going, just adding to what Jason said, and having kind of shining the light on yourself, you have to do that. And this isn't about being unethical and whatnot, but look, you have to sell yourself, right? You're without a question, you're selling yourself. And that's what you have to remember, is that, again, you are selling yourself. Why are you the best fit for this role? So if you need to go in and be like, hey, like, this is, I led this process, I designed this structure, I communicated with the teacher, you know, I gave everyone what to do, I was staffing kids, you know, I was checking the final product, I put together the PowerPoint. And people are like, oh, you really did all that? But like, yeah, I really did. You know, then you could whip out the PowerPoint that you worked on, right? So it's not, you might think, oh, you might be going overboard, but guys, you really need to sell yourself, because just best believe your competition and your peers, they're not going to be taking a back seat and like, oh, you know, I had this great girl on my team. She did everything. I had this great guy. He managed everything. He organized everything. No, they're going to talk about themselves in the first person. So you have to make sure to do that, because you have to sell yourself. And then I still want to add a few things to that, but to the just pivoting a little bit before, you know, transitioning off this, is for the brain teasers, right? I want to give everyone an example of how to, like, calmly walk through a brain teaser, right? So a brain teaser I got asked was, and the guy, I know the guy who asked me, the partner who asked me, he really thought he had me shook. He asked me this question and he was like, yeah, like, he's not going to know how to answer this. I got him, right? So the question he asked me was, he was like, hey, Sajan, how many windows are there in New York City? Right, how many windows in New York City are there? And I was like, you know, and I saw the smirk come on his face, but I was like, man, come on, I'm gonna walk through this with some logic, and you know, I'm gonna show you how to do this. So I was like, all right, look, I'm gonna assume that we start at Wall Street, and I'm gonna assume when you say New York City, I'm gonna go all the way up to Harlem. So I'm gonna go up to like 140th or something, right? You know, by Columbia or Harlem. I'm gonna assume that. I'm gonna assume that there is I'm going to assume that there's 11 avenues, you know, starting all the way on 1st Ave, going to 11th, or 12 avenues, whatever. So I'm going 12 avenues across. I'm going 140 blocks up. And then I'm going to subtract, like, maybe 20 or 30 blocks, because you have a big patch of grass in the middle known as Central Park. You take those out. And then what I did is I said, hey, you know, the apartment I lived in had 12 floors. There were 10 apartments on each floor. Each apartment had like 7 windows. So there was about 70 windows on each floor. So there was about roughly 800 windows in my building. So I said, I'm going to use my building as a proxy, as an average building in Manhattan. So I'm going to assume that each block has 10 buildings going across the block, and then there's another 20 buildings going down it. So I'm going to take 800 windows. I'm going to multiply it by the number of buildings on my block. So that means that each block has like 10,000 windows. And I'm going to take 10,000 windows. I'm going to multiply it by 140 streets, because there are 140 streets. You know, whatever. That's how I gave the answer, right? There's no way to know how many windows are in New York City, but that's like a logical way to say it. Hey, there's X amount of streets. There are X amount of avenues. You know, assume that each building has 1,000 windows. Now assume the number of buildings, you know. And that's kind of like a real life example. And he was like, oh shit, like that's probably the best answer I've ever gotten to that question. And I was like, I know, because I'm probably the best candidate you've ever interviewed, right?
No, I mean, that's definitely a good way to answer. I think the brain teaser, though, is something that's very separate. And I, we're definitely going to go maybe on one short podcast just on that, because it's something that most people are very scared about. And people don't really like to talk about, just because they're like its own beast. If we want to go back, this is the last thing I want to say about the behavioral questions. Is that, you know, you just have to make sure that you follow your stories in a very logical sequence, and you're just able to back up anything that you say. You know, don't be flustered when the interviewer starts asking questions. Make sure everything you talk about is professional. You know, don't talk about anything that could seem, you know, crossing the line or unprofessional. Those are just the major things. I mean, I heard, like, there was one time, you know, there was one question, right, that I had you know, a client speak to me about. And they basically said, oh, like, if there are three things your friends would say about you, what would you say? And one of the answers they gave was, oh, they'll say I'm a cool person. You know, I mean, granted, right, I don't think that's a bad question. But the interviewer basically gave the feedback that it wasn't professional and it made the person seem cocky. I have my own opinion on that. But I would definitely, you know, you got to make sure you earn the side of caution when you answer some of the questions or some of the stories you talk about. Just make sure, you know, if you have to question it, don't fucking say it, right? That's basically, you know, the main thing you should think about. But yeah, I mean, I think that's basically the behavioral part. There's so many behavioral questions that could be asked. The main thing is to try it in your life or throughout your college career. Try to get as many experiences as you can so you can pull situations from your life and you could answer a lot of these behavioral questions very easily. But the last thing, right, no, the third part, I think most people forget. So most people just think about technical, think about behavioral. But the last part is the emotional part, your ability to connect with your interviewer. So on the phone, it's very difficult. But in person, it's not as hard as you think, right? You have to be able to, you know, by looking at your the person in front of you, analyze. You got to try to analyze, oh, you know, is this person having a tough day? You know, should I keep my answers a little short? And it's like, you know, by looking at the reaction, you know, when you're making these questions, like, should I, you know, tighten up my answers a little bit? Or maybe you have to switch it up and say, well, now should I start asking them questions? Should I throw some heat on their way? So one thing a word of advice my mentor gave me when I was interviewing was, you know, I think I still use it to this day, and it's definitely very, very powerful advice, is that to the best you can, right, try to ask as many questions as you can as quickly as possible to your interviewer, right? So meaning, right, let's say Sajan is interviewing, right? He asked me a few questions. If there's like a pause in the interview, you know, offer to say, oh, you might have, if I ask you a question, and then they'll start asking them a question, have some questions prepared, and then also be able to think on the fly and, you know, pull out some questions that occur from some of the questions they ask you, right? Being able to ask your interviewer questions, right, allows you to do two things, right? It takes the pressure off you and basically makes the interviewer waste more time because they're going to be talking the entire time. But that, when that happens, right, after the interview is done, the interviewer basically, people love talking about themselves and people love to put the input on anything. The more the interviewer talks, probably the better impression they'll have on you. That's the honest truth. It also gives you less of an opportunity to fuck up, right? So the only thing that they can think about, right, is that, wow, I had a great conversation with this kid. No, let's hire this kid. That's basically the only thing that can really happen, right? Especially if you're able to connect with people on a personal level. And that's something I think most people forget. They think, you know, if I crush the technical and I have, like, these good behavior questions, that's all I need. You also need to be able to connect with your interviewer to the best you can, right? You can't always do it. There's some, like, you know, duds and losers out there who are interviewing you who have no personality. But, you know, there are many people in this world that you can connect with and be able to connect on, like, no, you guys play the same sport or you're from the same background, it'll definitely, you know, put you way ahead in the resume pile when it comes to, you know, when they select candidates. I don't know if you ever, like, an example of that, Sajan, when you interviewed and how you were able to connect with someone on a personal level.
Yeah, so what you had, so this goes back to what Jason said earlier when we talked about, so what we're talking about is developing that emotional intelligence or having that ability to take verbal cues. So going on a little bit of a tangent, the best way to develop that is to go out and talk to people, be involved on campus, right? speaking with people you don't know, right? Because what you'll start doing is you'll start learning how to quickly read microaggressions, hand gestures. You'll be able to anticipate when people are going to speak. You'll anticipate when people want to ask questions. You're not born with that shit, right? That takes time, right? And the advice I give to a lot of students when we go speak is like, hey, if you see a group of folks that you don't know, like go up and talk to them. Like go and sit at their table and be like, hey, I'm new to the school here. You guys, you don't mind if I sit down with you? Like I'm totally new here. Whether or not you're new here, who gives a shit? They don't know that. Just go and talk to them, get to know them, right? They'll forget whether you're new or not by the time you get to know them, right? And then a lot of advice I give to guys in particular, and I mean, this could work for girls too. I know for guys who are really bad at speaking and just being personable, I'm just like, yo, go and talk to a group of girls, like by yourself, and just introduce yourself and just have a conversation, right? And you're like, how the f*** does this relate to interviewing, right? Listen, if you can't talk to a bunch of strangers at your school or in your class, like if you can't go up to some student and like appear in your class and develop a rapport with someone who goes to your school, is in the same class as you, and you're a total stranger to them at the end of the semester, how the f*** are you going to go and speak to an MD, right? If you can't conversate with a peer, again, someone at the same school, same age range, same ambitions, if you can't go and talk to that person, how are you going to go into an interview and speak to someone there, right? Like, think on that for a second. If you can't speak to a peer and develop a relationship with people at your school that you don't know and just build rapport, how are you going to be successful developing quick rapport in an interview? You're not going to be able to, right? The reason this is important is the more you do this, you'll be able to develop the intuition of like, man, I need to shut up right now, or maybe I should say something. You'll understand when to interject in the conversation. I'm telling you, it is extremely valuable because you'll be in an interview and you could take an awkward situation and make it perfect because you'll understand, okay, this person's either having a shitty day, they don't want me to talk, they're not interested in being here. And then you can craft what you say based on what's going on, what you're reading, right? And then you can literally turn, you can flip the dime on a switch. So to my answer to that question of have I been in a situation like that, I've been in many situations like that. But I've been able to come in and be like, all right, this person, they're a talker, they're not a talker. You know, I asked this one question and they got them talking, so let me ask similar questions. You know, it takes time to learn how to finesse that conversation, right? And that happens with anyone. Anyone can come into that room. You have to be able to gauge the temperature of like, hey, how am I going to direct the traffic? How am I going to direct the flow of this conversation? I think that is truly the best information. If you take something from this podcast episode, learn how to take verbal cues and try to anticipate the temperature of what that person is. Are they coming in a good mood, a bad mood? You know, what is the vibe that you're getting from that person? That is extremely important. And that'll go across not only for interviews, but also as you start working with people. So.
No, that's definitely true. I think it's something that it's definitely overlooked because being able, you know, that's why I think also when you know, we're going to talk about resume building in another episode too, is that, you know, in your resume, you want to put your interests and things that you do as hobbies because they're talking points and being able to speak about things other than work and the interview itself. You know, I always say you always have to remember the person that's in front of you is a person and they have life experiences and they have things that they do outside of work, right? Even though, you know, people in banking and finance in general work, you know, a shit ton of hours, you know, they use their free time to enjoy themselves and do things that they love, hopefully. And, you know, they're people at the end of the day. So, you know, you have to try to the best you can relate to them, because if you're able to do that, again, you take the pressure off yourself and they see you more as someone that, you know, because at the end of the day, they want someone that's smart. They want someone that's done a lot, that's ambitious, but the most part, right? They want someone that they can see themselves with for 5 hours, 6 hours, 15 hours a day for 6, 7, 5 days, whatever days a week. You know, this is basically like, you know, they're hiring someone that's going to be like their mini family. So they want to make sure the person that they're sitting next to and they have to interact with day in and day out is someone that they can enjoy being with. And that's something I think, again, it's overlooked. That's why, you know, you have to be presentable. You have to have a personality. You can't just be, you know, you have to be smart, right? But you have to be like that total package. That's the way you really stand out, and that's how you really get, you know, the job offer at the end of the day, is because you represent, you know, the mold of what that company or that group's looking for.
But, yeah. So I know that's a lot to even as Jason was finishing that, I'm looking at it right now. I'm like, man, like that. This is probably a lot to digest for everyone. But to recap, it's the three pillars of technical, you know, just the nuts and bolts, the blocking and tackling of just knowing the answers to the basic stuff, the foundation, but also knowing the deeper level, advanced conceptual questions and having the ability to answer the conceptual stuff. Obviously, speaking to your own personal experiences. And then the third thing, which we'll both agree, Jason and myself, is the ability to be personal. And it's a little vague and a bit of a gray area, but having the ability to really connect with your interviewer is probably the most important thing.
No, yeah, absolutely. I think if anything, you want to make sure that's why you have to prepare good questions in your interview. And then, you know, you have to just be able to some way, you know, try to be personable in your interview. You know, the person at the end of the day is a person. They're not a fucking machine or a computer. You can, you know, you definitely can find some type of, you know, connection or some type of common interest or some topic that you could talk about that's outside of just finance.
Yeah. And we didn't even talk on the type of questions to ask in an interview. And that's another podcast episode, but God, like everyone, if you ask the right questions and you just get that person talking, before you know it, they'll be like, oh, time's up, next guy's in. And they're just going to leave that room with a positive impression of you. So that's such an important thing too. And I can't wait to talk about that, like the good questions to ask, right? So mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, all right, guys. Well, there's definitely, you know, a lot of content, you know, hopefully able to, you know, absorb some of it. But you know, till the next time, thanks again for listening to, you know, the Non-Target Life.
Yeah, guys, appreciate it. It was episode 4, hashtag NTL, and we will see you guys next time. Take care.
See you guys.
All right, man.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.